The morning of today's Daf Menachos Sadi Zion. We find ourselves in Sadi Vav Amud Beis towards the bottom of the Amud. We're talking about the Shulchan. A big part of the 11th parak of Menachos has been about the Lechem Apanim, and we are focusing and turning our attention to the Shulchan itself. Yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking about the Shulchan, the dimensions of the Shulchan, dimensions of the bread, and dimensions of the Shulchan. We all know the dimensions of the bread. The Mishnah in yesterday's Daf gave us very clear linear measurements of the length and width of the bread, folded upwards, and how it's situated on the Shulchan. What we discussed yesterday's daf, and we will continue again to discuss in today's daf, is that the dimensions of the Shulchan actually is a bit of a moving target. There are two opinions amongst the Tanaim in terms of how could the dimensions of the Shulchan. How could there be a machlokus regarding the dimension of the Shulchan? The Torah says it's one amma by two ammas. So as we learned in yesterday's daf, and we're going to learn again in today's daf, it's predicated on the fact that when it comes to an amma is a measurement. Obviously, it's a linear measurement. But in terms of the length of an amma, so there is variability. Generally speaking, an amma is six tefachim. But in the Beis HaMikdash, there are many things that are measured not with a six tefach amma, but rather with a five tefach amma. Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, we're going to learn together later this morning, the Mishnah Kalim, have a debate regarding the amma of the Beis HaMikdash as it relates to the Shulchan, whether we should be using the six tefach amma or the five tefach amma. And so now that creates a discrepancy in terms of how big the table is. So either the table is 5 by 10, or the table is 6 by 12 tefachim, depending on how much an amma is. And so now, based on those two positions, that's how the bread is going to be configuring on the top of the Shulchan. Either it's going to be covering the totality of the Shulchan, or there's actually going to be a two tefach space in between the two columns of the bread. We have already discussed this point yesterday's daf. As we approach the end of yesterday's daf, so we moved on to a discussion of whether or not the Shulchan is mekabel tumah or not mekabel tumah. And there are a number of considerations as we have a tumah tahara discussion regarding the Shulchan. So the primary discussion yesterday that it's wood, and depending on how the frame is framed around the Shulchan, there is a one tefach frame around the Shulchan, so there is a discussion in terms of whether or not it has a toch or does not have a toch. Let's assume, like the Gemara said yesterday, that the frame goes below, not above, and the frame is just basically ornamental, like serves like almost like a skirt around the table. So that means to say that the top of the Shulchan, much like the table that's right in front of us right now, is just a flat piece of wood. And does a flat piece of wood make kabel tumah? So generally the answer is no, but it could very well be that a table, being that it's functional, not only is it functional, remember the expression that we used in yesterday's daf, it's a tavla hamisapeches. I could use this side, I could flip it over, I could use the other side, and so maybe a table would be different, and maybe a wooden table would be mekabel tumah, and the Gemara entertained that discussion yesterday. What about the fact that it's a fixture, and that it never is moved? And we know that when something is a kli etza asui lanachas, when I have something which is, I have no plans of moving it, no intentions of moving it, literally is a fixture, so then we know the halach is, it's not mekabel tumah. It has to be dumb as a sock, it has to behave like that of a sack in which it's picked up, it's put down again, and the table's not picked up. So the Gemara says, well, that's not, that the assumption's incorrect. The table is picked up. During Alila Rego, we show the Jewish people the Shulchan and the bread on top of the Shulchan, so it is picked up. So in that regard, it is going to be mekabel tumah. And so that was the discussion we had until yesterday, and today, and this morning, we're going to have one more point of tumah tahara. Now, I've told you already repeatedly in yesterday's daf, at the beginning of today's daf, the table's made out of wood. Okay? I do not lie. Well, I make mistakes, but I don't lie. The table is made out of wood, but we also know that the table was plated, and it was plated with gold. And so what we have over here is that yes, it's true. The base material of the table is wood, but the plating of the table is made out of gold. And so when I have something that's plated with metal, so halachically, what do I look at? What do I look at it as? Do I look at it as wood, or do I look at it as metal? And as we're going to learn together now in the next number of lines of Gemara, we look at it as metal. So like, what kind of discussion are we having? Wood, inverted, I could use both sides, it's movable, meaning it's, when all said and done, it's a metal Shulchan. And if it's a metal Shulchan, of course it's mekabel tumah. And like, what kind of discussion have we been having in the last, you know, almost amud of Gemara? And that's where we're headed this morning. Tanan, sorry. Typically, this is where we left off yesterday. It is eight lines from the bottom of the Amud. So let us suggest Mishum Sipui that it has a gold plating. And Milo Tanan, and the Gemara over here quotes the Mishnah Kelim. The Mishnah Kelim is going to be talking about utensils with a plating. Hashochem v'hadul b'ki shenifchasu o shechipasu m'shayish. Now over here, this Mishnah Kelim is going to be talking about wooden items, and they are plated. But over here, the plating is plated with marble. Now keep in mind, we're working in the other direction. And what I mean by that is, marble is a stone. A stone is not mekabel tuma. So over here, if we view the plating as significant, so then that means that we're looking at something which is not mekabel tuma. By the shulchan, which we're discussing right now, it's the opposite discussion. Meaning we're looking at something which is base wood, but then it has a gold plating which is mekabel tuma. So just understand that even though the principle is the same principle, we're going in two different directions. But okay, but the principle is the same. So if I have either a shulchan or a dulbaki shenivchasu or shechipa mishayish, so it was plated with marble. It's not plated all the way. That means to say that there are areas that left exposed areas of the table. So tameim, so it's going to be mekabel tuma. Rav Yehuda amar makom hanachas chatichos. Now, how much exposure are we talking about? Okay, so the Tanaim debate. Tanakama says enough for the cups, and Rav Yehuda says enough for the pieces of meat. But anyway. The point that we're making for the Mishnah, and the Gemara makes it right now, shayir in lo, shayir lo. And that is that if there is an exposure of the table, so then we disregard the plating. But if there is no exposure of the table, and the plating goes all the way around and covers all the surface area of the table, so then the definition of that item is going to be generated by the plating. The plating will define what the item is. And so that means to say now that if it's plated with marble, so that's stone, and therefore this is a kli evin, which is not mekabel tuma. Similarly, over here, when we're talking about the shulchan, if it's plated with gold, it is. And the plating goes all around, it does. So therefore, it is now gold, and therefore, it should be mekabel tuma. And what was the discussion we were having for the last amud of Gemara? V'chite mekam b'tzipu amed kan tzipu shein omeid. Suggest the Gemara, maybe it depends on how secure the plating is screwed into the utensil. Maybe it makes a difference. Tzipui omeid, meaning that it's really secured in with nails and screws and whatever fasteners you use for the plating. Versus the tzipui she'ena omeid, yeah, it's a plating, but in other words, it's just laid on top and it can easily disassemble and take it off. The Gemara says there's no such distinction. In fact, this was a question Rish Lakish asked Rav Yochanan. B'tzipui omeid or b'tzipui she'ena omeid? Does it make a difference whether the plating is secured or unsecured? And also, does it matter if the plating covers the lip, the rim of the kli, or does that not matter? And Rav Yochanan gives very conclusive answers to these questions. He says, "Lo shnat tzipui omeid, lo shnat tzipui she'ena omeid." It doesn't matter how secure the plating is. Lo shna chipa es levazvazin, lo shna lo chipa levazvazin. It doesn't matter whether the rim is covered, the rim is not covered. If the plating is covering the majority of the kli, and even if it's really it's not so secured, it's not so screwed in, and it's not so fastened in, it doesn't matter. The kli is going to have the definition of the plating. So where do we stand right now? Basically, what the Gemara is asking is, I don't understand. The shulchan is gold, meaning it's a wood base, but it's plated with gold, and therefore the shulchan is gold. So what kind of discussion were we having over the second half of yesterday's daf? So the Gemara says, well, maybe we could resurrect the argument in one other way. The wood that's used is not just any kind of wood, but it's atzei shitim. I think they translate it as acacia wood. It doesn't matter to me. In other words, the point is acacia?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So it doesn't matter to me. The whole point over here is that it's really important. It's really significant wood. And so maybe when the wood itself is so significant, the plating that goes around it is not going to take away the definition of the wood. That's a suggestion. The Gemara says, okay, it's a suggestion. So Reish Lakish, in fact, espouses to such a viewpoint where Reish Lakish does make a distinction between a cheaper wood and a more expensive wood. And when you're talking about a cheaper wood, so the plating goes around it, it's going to redefine the kli. And if it's a more expensive wood, again, the Gemara over here, Reish Lakish, is referring to different types of woods. I don't know how to define them. It doesn't matter. In other words, then if it's a more expensive type of wood, so the plating that goes around it He's not going to redefine the kli. Okay, that's great. But that's Reish Lakish. El Rav Yochanan da Amar kli mismas nami bateli maikel meimar. But Rav Yochanan's position over here is super clear, that it doesn't matter what the base wood material is made out of, whether it's a cheap wood or quality wood. If I plate it with a gold or any metal on top of it, it redefines the kli as a metal kli. And so once again, Hadron Kush L'Duchta, we're back to square one. So over here, we had such a long discussion about the Shulchan. It's a metal table. Doesn't matter if it's pshute kli, if it's pshute, if it has a toch, it's metal, period. And what kind of discussion are we having? So the Gemara says over here, Shani Shulchan. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what? In general, it's a great question. But you can't ask that question regarding the Shulchan. Even though the Shulchan was plated with gold, we're not disputing the facts, but the Shulchan itself, however, still retains its identity of being wood. How come? Because when the Navi describes the Shulchan, the Navi describes it as a wood table. And the Navi's not arguing over the Metzius, over the reality. The Navi is just simply saying that the nature of the table in the base of Mikdash is that it is still fundamentally a wood table. How do I know that? Derachman Akarya Eitz. The Torah refers to it as wood. Torah over here meaning the Navi, but obviously Navua is Dvar Hashem. Shenamar, the Pasuk says, Amizbech Eitz Shalosh Amos Gavoa Arko, Shem Amos Umikatsoslova Arko Vikirasav Eitz. So over here, there is a clear description in the Navi Yecheskel about the Mizbech being made out of wood. We're given dimensions over here. And Vikirasav Eitz Vaidabar Alai Zah Shulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. And then the Gemara quotes the rest of the Pasuk where it talks about the Shulchan. Now, we will note in just a moment, in fact, less than that, how the Pasuk starts with the Mizbech and ends with the Shulchan, but for our purposes right now, problem resolved. Meaning, I don't know why the Shulchan and the Beis HaMikdash is different, but it's different. The Navi says it's different. Meaning that generally speaking, when we have any kind of plating over a kli, and the plating is covering the surface area of the kli, so the kli now gets defined by the plating. But when it comes to the Shulchan, the base of Mikdash, that's different. Why? Because the Navi says so. The Navi, the Pasuk that we just quoted, started talking about the Mizbech and ended talking about the Shulchan. And what kind of transition was that? The Gemara asked exactly that question. Pasuk Mizbech v'siyim b'shulchan, the opens it up with the Mizbech and ends with the Shulchan, Rav Yochan, Rav Elazar, Dami Tavayu. And here we have now, Divrei Hashkafa, Divrei Agadata. I already noted that page per page in Menachos, I don't think, I'm guessing right now, it's a guesstimate, I don't think there's any Masechta with less Agadata than that of Menachos. Menachos is just halacha, halacha, halacha throughout the entire Masechta. Really, really little, close to no Agadata. And here we get in today's Gemara, a morsel, just a morsel. Three lines. So the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan, Rav Elazar, Dami Tarvayim. Bezman shebeis hamikdash kaim mizbech mechaper l'adam. Ve'achshav she'ein beis hamikdash kaim shulchan sha'adam mechaper alav. So once upon a time when there was a beis hamikdash, so how do we receive our kapara? Through the mizbech. But now in the absence of the mizbech, how do we receive our kapara? Shulchan sha'adam, our table. Our table in our houses, our dining room table. So how is that providing a kapara? So Rashi over here writes, Shulchan sha'adam. Rashi is towards the top. It's five lines from the top. Shulchan sha'adam mechaper alav denosim prusa l'orchim. Because what you do at your dining room table is that you invite guests. And Tosfos is over here also, quoting a Gemara Sanhedrin, de gedola legima. In other words, you're feeding the poor off the table in your house. So in other words, these are the kinds of activities which are going to be providing a kapar for us now that we don't have a mizbeach. Okay, and that explains how the Navi Chesel is transitioning from mizbeach to shulchan. Yeah, right, such a minug. Arbas nipishol zav hayusham, minahani mili. Okay, we are talking about the table, and now we're talking about the accessories to the table. So as we learned in the Mishnah, there are a number of accessories to the table. Are these items listed in the Mishnah, are they actually mentioned in the Torah? And the answer is yes. And we're going to see that right now. Minahani mili, amar av kitina, amar krava, asisa, karosav, v'kaposav, v'ksosav, umanikiosav. Okay, I apologize for the pronunciation. But the pasuk in Parshas Truma describing the menorah describes four accessory items to the shulchan. So what are they? So the Gemara actually is going to identify all four of these terms used in the Torah. So ka'aros av elo defusim. So the ka'aros, that's the molds. We already discussed that earlier in the perek, how we're going to take the lechem aponim and put them in the mold. take them from the mold, put them into the oven where there's a mold in the oven, take them from the oven, put them into another mold, right? Three molds we talked about in total, that is the ka'arosav. Two, kaposav ela bezichin. We also discussed previously how there are spoonfuls, two spoonfuls of lavona that are situated. Where are they located? So that is a moving target. Some are of the opinion they're located on the lechem, some are the opinion that's located next to the lechem, right, in that area that's between the two columns. That's, of course, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that there is such an area, good. But anyway, those are the two spoons. Kisosav, elu snipim. The side props that are there to support the bread along the side. So remember, we also discussed them pretty recently. They are basically vertical walls that are laid against the side of the shulchan to help support the six columns of bread, where there are six loaves stacked one on top of the other. That's a lot of weight, and so the columns are going to be providing side support. Where do they go down to? So we already learned earlier in this perek machlokas whether they are actually going to be situated on the table itself, or they go all the way down to the floor. What is that predicated on? So if you remember, we talked about this also earlier. It's predicated on how we view the shape of the bread. Is the shape of the bread rectangular in nature? Is it a box-like shape? This we learned back on study Dalam and Beis. Or does it look like a boat? So if it looks like a boat, so we can have the side props actually resting on the table right underneath the boat. And remember the Gemara earlier described how basically the bread and the side posts interlock with one another, each one supporting one another. And but that's if you hold like it looks like a boat. But if you hold like it looks like a rectangle, like a U, so then the snipim go all the way down to the bottom. Anyway, minakiosav. So what's that? Elokanim. Those are the rods. Remember how we gave a short description yesterday's daf, how the rods were placed between one loaf and the other, allowing air to filter in, and so that the breads themselves do not spoil. And then still in the pasuk, asher yisach b'hem, shemisachen b'hem es alechem. And what do the rods do? Well, the rods create some sort of schach over the lechem. Schach over here, if you can imagine in our sukkahs, it's just an imagery. So the schach in our sukkah. So over here, when you're looking at the bread, so they have the schach of the rods. I understand it's not kosher schach, but that's misachachin bahen. And the rods are hovering on top of the breads and also serving as the base for the bread above it. Okay. Mosiv Rava. So what we just did is we identified the four items in the Torah that the Torah uses to describe as accessories to the Shulchan. And what we just did in our Gemara is we gave a definition to these items. And so what we have all learned together is that these items are min haTorah, meaning these aren't just simply, they are functional items servicing the Shulchan, but there also is a din d'oraisa that you have to have these items. And so what bothers the Gemara now is the following question. And that is, well, first of all, go back to a question that you asked yesterday. I still don't know the answer, but I'm in good company. Tosfos does know the answer as well. So, right, the Rav Yossi said that the frame of the Shulchan does not go down, but rather goes up. And as we described yesterday, that means that according to Rav Yossi, so the bread did not have the side post, but the bread was just basically secured by the frame. And so you asked me yesterday, so what does that mean? He doesn't have the props, he doesn't have the kanim. So Tosfos over here in today's daf asked that question, and he doesn't give an answer. Mm. Okay, good. Okay.
You said that if it's sit on a kedas, then the snippet sit on the shulchan.
Yeah. The Gemara said it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the top of the lechem haponim is the same dimension whether it's sit on a kedas or not. How does it fit in?
In other words, I guess it protrudes just a little bit outside.
Past the snippet?
Maybe. Could be. I don't know. Could be, but the Gemara said it. I'm just saying over the Gemara. Yeah. Okay. So Mosiv Rava. So what? Where does all this bring us to? It brings us to the following question: Lo Sidra Kanim Velo Nitila Sam Dochis Es Shabbos. You can't put the rods in and out on Shabbos for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. But that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us you can't do it. So and what did we learn back in the Mishnah? So what the Kohanim do is that before Shabbos they take the rods out. And then on Shabbos, in other words, for one day from Erev Shabbos until Motzei Shabbos, so the breads are going to be sitting there unsupported by the rods. Okay, fine. But in other words, but you can't put the rods in and out on Shabbos. And then after Shabbos is over, they go in and they put the rods in. Okay, great. And we'll talk about that earlier. What the Gemara says is, I don't understand. These rods are not just simply functional equipment that go together with the table, although they are, they're also a din d'oraisa. So if it's a din d'oraisa, so why are they not doches HaShabbos? That's exactly Rava's question. I'll get there. Now, if you're telling me that there's a din d'oraisa to have the rods in there, so am I doches as a Shabbos? So why don't they override the Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Hadam Rav Lav Milsi Hidamri. So Rava says, look, I'm rethinking my question. I have an answer to my very own question. Did none. The Mishnah. The Mishnah that we learned in yesterday's daf, Klal Amar Rebbe Akiva Kol Malacha She'ashalal La'asosam Erev Shabbos in Adochas HaShabbos. So you remember what we learned yesterday by Rebbe Akiva. If it's something that I could have done before Shabbos, so then it doesn't override the Shabbos. I could remove the rods before Shabbos. It's not the end of the world. And he goes on to explain. Haninami Afshad Delo Dachi Shabbos Alayu. So the putting in the insertion of the rods, the removal of the rods, I could have done it before Shabbos.
Yeah,
wait, just 1 second. I'll get there. So time am I delo leafish lechem? Because remember, the whole point of putting the rods in there is so that the bread doesn't get moldy. So bechi ashira lo meafish. And what are we talking about over here? We're talking about 24 hours. So for 24 hours, it's not a big deal if we go sans the rod. Kiditanya, and the Gemara quotes a brisa over here. Ketza nichnas merav Shabbos. So here's now the brisa, and I'll read it quickly. Just going to give us a description of what I described a moment ago. How they're going to go in on erev Shabbos, take the rods out. So ketza nichnas merav Shabbos. They go in before Shabbos for shamtam. They take the rods out. Manikam larachan shoshokan, and they put them alongside the table. Right, I'd venture a guess that they can't put it on the table because we already discussed in yesterday's daf. There's no room on the table, so they put it next to it. Umotzi Shabbos nechnas, and then after Shabbos they go in. Magbia Rosh Hashochala. And now remember, after Shabbos, what do we have? We have 12 loaves, but they're new, meaning they were the ones that were placed on the Shabbos. What happened to last week's bread? Taken off, eaten by the Kohanim. Great. So after Shabbos now, we have two columns of six loaves, one on top of the other. But now the rods haven't been put in. Remember, we took out the rods before Shabbos. So after Shabbos, we go in and we lift up the bread. And so what we're going to do is we're going to carefully lift the bread so that we can put the rods in after Shabbos. How many rods are we talking about? So four loaves are going to have three rods underneath them. The top loaf is only going to have two rods underneath it. And at tachtona, and the bottom loaf, ain't a tzricha kol ikar. It doesn't need any rods at all. Lefisha munach al tiara shel shochan, because it's sitting on the shochan itself. Shochan is made out of metal, right? Remember what we learned earlier today. Shochan is plated with metal, so therefore it's a nice cool area on the very bottom. So the bottom lacham upon him could be sitting on the table itself. In fact, it does sit on the table itself. And then for the next four loaves, so it's going to be based with three of the rods going across it, trisected along the bottom of each of the next loaves. And then we get to the top loaf, only two rods. The reason why only two rods, says the Braisa, is because it's the top loaf. There's not much weight on the top loaf. I only need two rods. If you're keeping score at home, so that means to say that there are 14 rods now for each one of the columns, and so for a total of 28. And that number should sound familiar, because that's what the Mishnah taught us yesterday. There are 28 rods in total.
Is Shulchan actually supporting only two bread? Because the rest are supported by the rods?
And I mean, the Gemara yesterday said that, let's say it like that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, whatever, it could be. Okay, yeah, that's the simplest way to say it. All right, the question which already has been asked to me a couple times. So we have just learned together that putting the rods in and taking the rods out, so you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. It doesn't override the Shabbos. It's Chilul Shabbos. What's the Chilul Shabbos? So Rashi, it's a really interesting Rashi. It's a much discussed Rashi. So Rashi addresses this question. Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph. If you could see the Rashi, it's a little bit above where we are right now. It's about a third of the way down. Amalo Dachi Shabbos. Why isn't it overriding the Shabbos? Alpha Gavin Shvus B'Mikdash. Now Rashi over here starts off with an assertion and an assumption. And that is, putting rods in, we can't be talking about a Malacha D'Oraisa. In other words, we know that there's an issue in the Torah of building. Okay, but we're not building a building. We're just simply putting rods in and out of a kli, right? It's not as temporary as Lego, but it's certainly we're not building an edifice. We're not building a structure. We're just simply taking rods in and out. So Rashi starts off with an assertion that it's a din d'rabbanan, it's an issur d'rabbanan. And Rashi is bothered by, and you often ask this question, and you know I sometimes struggle to give an answer. Okay. But Rashi, Rashi says ain't shvus b'mikdash, and you know that there's no issur d'rabban in the Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi continues. He says ha'itel t'lav mishum shvusu. So Rashi says, first of all, I'm telling you that the removal of the rods, it's not an issur tiltel, meaning we're not talking about muksa over here. Meaning it could be muksa, but if it were muksa alone, that wouldn't have prevented us from putting it in and out because of the rule of ain shvus b'mikdash. Good. The rest of Rashi is now where it gets really interesting and very confusing. Then Rashi goes on to say, Ela de mechze kebona v'soser. You know what the problem is when you take the rods, put it in and out on Shabbos? It's mechze kebona v'soser. It looks like you're building and you're taking apart. Now, when you hear that from Rashi, what you're basically hearing is, well, you know, it gives off the sense that we're building. It gives off the sense that we're building, gives off the appearance that we're building. So Rashi over here seemingly is describing a issur d'rabbanan, meaning it is mechze kebona. It looks like building. So the Rashi obviously is confusing because Rashi immediately from the beginning rejects, oh, this is not muksa, because that's a din d'rabbanan. And you know ain shvus b'mikdash, oh, but you know what it is? Mechze kebona. It looks like building. What probably, and again, now at this point in time, I'm suggesting, take it for what it's worth, it's a suggestion. What Rashi may mean is the following. Meaning that even as we say that it's a din d'rabbanan, we could still make layers and levels in din d'rabbanan. Meaning muksa is a din d'rabbanan. Like a, how do I say this? A pure din d'rabbanan. Meaning it is not rooted in a malacha per se. It's just that the Chachamim want us to be more aware of Shabbos, have a better sense of Shabbos, and so therefore, don't pick up this pencil on Shabbos. Meaning, okay, a pencil I may come to write, but in other words, but if it's a pencil, just an example, don't pick up that rock. Meaning, to give us more of a sense of Shabbos, so there's an issur of muksa. But that is rabbinic in its very nature, in its very core. As opposed to over here, when we're talking about putting the rods in and out, so it's not just a muksa issue, it's a binyan issue. Now granted, maybe not min haTorah, but in other words, it's more connected to a malacha per se, and so therefore it is a higher level, it's a higher order d'rabbanan. I'm offering a possibility, just a suggestion in terms of how we could think about Rashi.
Could be a toledo.
And it doesn't sound like that way.
It could be.
It doesn't sound that way from Rashi, but I'm open.
What about others?
There's more discussion. This is a daf. we get it. Okay. Right. That's why Rashi. I agree with you, and that's why Rashi doesn't say that's binyan, and doesn't say it's oster, meaning it's a kli. So that's why it's mechze. I mean, that's what you're suggesting is, I think, why Rashi is not saying it's a malacha. But if it's not a malacha, so then why is it different than muksa? So I gave a suggestion. Take it. Don't take it. It's fine.
How is it actually done? They put the rod in, and then how the rod was supported?
Oh no, the rods were supported by the side posts, by the sneepim. And then there were the props on the side. Okay. Presumably. All right. Tanan Hasam. Okay. And for the rest of today's daf, so it's going to be a lot of configuration. Okay. So bear with me. I'm going to go through this quickly. We start off with the Mishnah in Kalim. So this Mishnah in Kalim should sound familiar. We've heard this Mishnah already a number of times throughout Shas. We get to hear in today's daf as well. Rabbi Meir Omer, I'm sorry, Tanan Hasan. We learned in the Mishnah over there. We are on the bottom of Tzadi Zion Amud Aleph, and it is we're six lines from the bottom. Rabbi Meir Omer Kolamash Ayu B'Mikdash Beinonios Chutz Mimizbech Azav VeHaKen VeSov VeYisod. So Reb Meir says that your standard Amma in the Beis HaMikdash were Beinonios. They were of a average Amma. Now, we already made this point yesterday. I made it also in the beginning of this morning, but I'll say it again. In other words, an Amma is a linear measurement. How long is an Amma? So you'd say it's standard, and it is standard, but there are multiple standards. One standard is the average Amma, which is made up of six tefachim. So to just give you a sense, an idea, so a tefach is your fist. And so therefore you put six of them together and you get an amma. Now the amma measurement is basically from your elbow as you bend it all the way to the tip of your middle finger. Now, obviously, in other words, in terms of people, there are taller people, shorter people, longer arms, shorter arms. And so, in other words, in terms of what would be the standard amma, so let's just say an average. Okay, but anyway.
5.5.
All right? Fine. Take an average. But the point is, however, is that in the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, sometimes we use an amma not made up of 6 tefachim, but sometimes we use it made up of 5 tefachim. And so what Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are arguing is that we know that that's a given, that we're going to be using a 5 tefach amma, not a 6 tefach amma. What is open for debate and deliberation over here is which kalim in the Beis HaMikdash are we going to be substituting the 6 tefach amma with the 5 tefach amma. That's the debate amongst the Tanaim. Rav Meir Omer Kol Amma Shehayu BeMikdash BeEinonu Yos Chutz MiMizbeach HaZav VeHakaron VeHasof VeVal Yesod. So, generally speaking, we use the standard, unless we're talking about the Mizbeach HaZav, which is the golden Mizbeach, which is in the Heichal, and Keren Sof VeYesod, which is the main components of the outer Mizbeach. Rav Yehuda Omer Amas Binyan Shisha Tzvachim V'Shol Kelim Chamisha. Now, Rav Yehuda makes a very simple distinction between the building of the building where we use 6 tefach amma, as opposed to any of the kalim. Meaning, he of course agrees with the mizbeach, but not just the mizbeach, the kalim as well. 5 tefach amma. What does that mean? So that means now that the menorah and the shulchan, which are kalim, so maybe the aron as well, maybe, but certainly the menorah and the shulchan are going to be used a 5 tefach amma. Now, truth of the matter is, after yesterday's daf, we knew all this already. Because in yesterday's daf, we already saw the Mishnah, and the Mishnah already basically presented to us the machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So over here, however, we're revisiting the machlokus because we're going to see the Mishnah in Kalim, and we're going to see now what the machlokus is predicated upon. I'm Rav Yochanan v'shnei mikra chadarshu. So Rav Yochanan says that both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are both using a pasuk in Yecheskel as a platform for this debate. And basically, we say like this. I read the pasuk in Yecheskel, Elomidas amizbech be'amos, amma v'tofach. So when measuring the mizbeach in amos, we use an amma v'tofach, which means a tofach obviously is a tefach, but an amma that's made up of an amma and a tefach. What does that mean, an amma and a tefach? Meaning that the standard amma was not 6 but 5 tefach. And v'cheka amma v'amma rocha v'gvula. V'cheka amma v'amma rocha v'gvula al sifasa safiv zeres ha'echas v'zeh gav ha'mizbeach. And then the Navi in Yecheskel goes on to describe various parts of the mizbeach. And so now what the Gemara is going to do is take apart the pasuk phrase by phrase and give definitions to what the Navi Yecheskel was describing. So first the cheka mizbeach yesod, that's the foundation, the base of the mizbeach. Amma rochav ze sovev. Then we're talking about the next ledge above that, which is the sovev. Ugvula safasa saviv zeres ha'echas el kronos. Now we're up to the top of the mizbeach, the four corners of the mizbeach. Literally horns, but there are four protrusions like we described already in greater detail earlier. Ze gav ha-mizbeach, ze mizbeach ha-zahav. The literally the back of the mizbeach, that's referring to the golden mizbeach. Good. So the Navi Yecheskel now is giving a description of how, instead of using the standard amma of 6 tefachim, we're going to be using the 5 tefach amma for these items. Here's what we know for sure. In describing the mizbeach, various aspects of the outer mizbeach, and the inner mizbeach, the golden mizbeach, so we're going to be using a 5 tefach amma, not 6 tefach amma. And how far did we go with that? Rav Meir savor zehu ba'amma bas chamisha hakol amos kelim ba'amma ba'sheish. So Rav Meir says, you know where we go with that? Nowhere. Meaning, we stop at the pasuk in Yecheskel. The pasuk in Yecheskel is describing the mizbeach, and instead of using a 6 tefach amma, we use a 5 tefach amma, and that's it. No more. Masha'in kain, Rav Yehuda savor, kazeh you call amos kelim. And Rav Yehuda says that, no, if you look back in the Navi, the Navi says kazeh, and the kazeh means to tell me that this is not just limited to the mizbeach, the outer mizbeach and the inner mizbeach, but also kazeh, also those other items that are in the heichal, notably the aron and the menorah. Okay, adkan. So basically now what we have over here is a machlokes between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda, in terms of, we know that there's an exception to be used when measuring the mizbeach, outer and inner, to use a 5 tefach amah, not a 6 tefach amah. A question of whether or not we're also going to use that to measure the menorah and the shochan. Good. And so now for the rest of the daf today, here comes the problem. The problem now is that for the outer mizbeach, we now know that the amah that we're using is not a 5 tef, is not a 6 tefach amah, but a 5 tefach amah. Now, we have gone through this before, thankfully. Oh, excellent. We've gone through this before. We've spoken about the dimensions of the mizbeach. The mizbeach is basically three blocks placed one on top of another. The base block is one amah high, and 32 by 32 amahs in area, length and width. We're talking about the outer mizbeach. Then it is another 5 amahs above that, 30 by 30. It is then another 3 amahs above that, 28 by 28. And then the krenos on the very top. Good. So we just expressed all this in terms of amahs. Now, how much is an amah? So now we all just learned together that in measuring some of the dimensions of the mizbeach, instead of 6, we're going to be using 5. Okay. Now, if we were using 6, what would the total height of the mizbeach be? Total height of the mizbeach would be 60. That's easy, because it's 10 amas from base to top, including the base, including the top, and so 10 times 6 is 60. But as we just learned together, that for some of the dimensions, we're not going to be using 6, but we're going to be using 5. And so now, for the rest of the daf today, what's going to end up happening is we're going to try to plug in these numbers, and it doesn't compute. I'm going to go through this quickly. I apologize for being quick about it. But basically, the Gemara is going to test run a couple of dimensions. So, right now, we are thinking that we are talking now from a height standpoint. Now, so we know that the total height of the mizbeach was 10 amos. Now, right now we are assuming that the yesod and the next ledge going up, which is 1 plus 5, that's 6. So they're going to be using not a 6 tefach amah, but rather 5. So 5 times 6, that's 30. V'arba b'nei shisa shisa. The next 4 above that are going to be made up of 6 tefach. So mizbeach kamehave. Now, if you take the numbers that we just learned together and we put them all together, chamisha v'arba. So that gets us to 54. Now, 54, what's the midpoint of the mizbeach? So it's 54 divided by 2. Pagdim mizbeach kamehave as from v'shiva. So that is now 27. Mikanos v'atzoviv kamehave esrim v'arba. Now, if I were to go from the kronos down to the soviv, from the top over here, how much is that? So that now gets me to 24. Kama batzel apagdim mizbeach talasa. Now, how much more down do I have to get to in order to get to the midpoint? So that's 3. In other words, we already established that the midpoint is 27. So now that would be 3 to get to the midpoint, vitzanan. Now here comes the problem. So in other words, if our configuration, if our current understanding and configuration is good, it's not good because of the following. We learned together a Mishnah. This Mishnah is in Midos. There's a line at the midpoint of the Mizbeach, at the vertical midpoint of the Mizbeach, and the point of that line is to demarcate which bloods go above and which bloods go below. When it comes to an animal, Chatos blood goes above, and Ola and all other bloods go below. When we're talking about a bird, just the opposite. Ola bloods go above, Chatos birds go below. So now, Elaha detanya gabe Ola sa'of. Now here, a description that we saw back in Zvachim about how the procedure is done of the Ola bird. Now remember, the Ola bird has to have the blood applied above the Chuta Sikra. Now, now he would go to the Sovev, Uvala Lekev and Dromis, and what he would do is he would turn to the southeast corner, Uvala Lekev and Dromis Mizrach, the southeast corner, Umolikas Rosha, and he would nip the back of the neck of the bird, Milika, meaning that shechita by a carbon bird, mimular pal mavdil, and he would separate the head from the body of the bird, umotzes dama, and he would squeeze out the blood, al kira mizbeach, along the walls of the mizbeach, v'imasa lamata meraglav, afilo amachas kshera. Now, while standing on the ledge, he has still one ama below him, in which he could squeeze the blood on the side of the mizbeach. So that means to say that this Mishnah in Zvachim is giving a clear description of how while you're standing on the ledge, you are still one amma above the midpoint. Now, so the Gemara says, but based on the configuration that we just gave, no, you're not. You're not above the midpoint. In fact, you are two tfachim below the midpoint, based on the current configuration that we just gave. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to change our assumption. Our original assumption is that instead of using six tefach, we're using five tefach, so we thought that was a function of height. No. We're going to now have to move over to the horizontal plane. And when we're talking about making an indent going in, so we're going to be shifting now from six to five. So the Gemara says, so we're talking now about the horizontal plane and the indentation when you go in. Don't take out the six tefach amma, take the five tefach. Here now becomes the problem. So now in terms of the height of the Mizbeach, so the total height is 60, because again, we're assuming now for height, we're using the standard amma of six tefach, 10 in total, so that makes for half the midway point being 30. Now here, life is going to be good. Because Mikanu Vatsoviv Kamehavi Chav Dalet. So now, from the horns until the Soviv. So what are we looking at? We're looking at 24. That's great. Because now as you're standing on the Soviv, as a Kohen standing on the Soviv, so now he's above the midpoint. And how much higher is he than the midpoint? He's six tfachim above the midpoint. So that's great. That fits in perfectly to what we learned just a moment ago. Kama basil apagdim is bech shisha vitzanan. And once again, we revisit the Mishnah. Imasal amata miragla vafilo ama achas kshera. Good. So now that the height is 60 and the midpoint is 30, and while standing on the Soviv, he is six tfachim above the midpoint, so that fits in perfectly with what he know. If he has the Ola bird in his hand, and now he can either squeeze the blood along the wall that he's facing, or even he can even go below his feet, even a full six tefachim below his feet, and he's still above the midpoint. That's great. Here's what's not great. But mayu kimta b'knisa. So the Gemara says, okay, but by the knisa, mimasas mukla b'knisa v'atzanan. And so now what's going to be the problem is that we're going to now figure out that based on the fact that in terms of the horizontal indentation, we're not using six, we're going to use five. So now we're going to get the top of the area of the Mizbeach all wrong. And so that is going to become a problem. And so therefore, once again, what we're then going to end up doing is changing our assumption for a second time. Okay, let's quickly recap. Okay, in the course of today's daf, we talked about you can't remove the rods. We finished up the topic of Tumah Tahara by the Shulchan. It's gold-plated, and still the Shulchan is a wood Shulchan. And that normally doesn't account for the general rules of plating, but the Shulchan is different, like we said today. We talked about the accessories of the Shulchan, so the side posts, the rods, the spoons, and the molds used to bake the bread. How come the insertion of the rods do not override the Shabbos? So the Gemara says because you could have done it before Shabbos. What violation is it? So Rashi says it's mechze kabona. And then we finished off today with the Mishnah in Kalim saying that we're using instead of a six, we're using a five tefach amma. The problem, of course, being is that using a five tefach amma, so now it doesn't fit into other configurations that we know regarding the Mizbeach. And tomorrow we'll just simply wrap it up in terms of, so then at what point do we use a five tefach amma as opposed to a six tefach amma?